you know, over the road assets like tractors and trailers, you know, trucks, 18-wheelers, articulated, you know, lorries, as they might be called in Europe. Really, it's really to track those resources, understand where they are, what are they doing, are they doing the things that they need to be doing, and are they doing what they're supposed to be doing in the most efficient manner possible. And that's also the, you know, the actual asset itself, as I say, the truck, the trailer, the product inside that trailer, and the driver that might be moving that piece of equipment.
Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, wherever you are in the world. This is the Digital Supply Chain Podcast, the number one podcast focusing on the digitization of supply chain. And I'm your host, Global Vice President at SAP, Tom Raftery. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Digital Supply Chain Podcast. My name is Tom Raftery with SAP, and my special guest on the show today is Mark. Mark, would you like to introduce yourself?
Yes, good morning. My name is Mark Stanton. I'm the General Manager for the Powerfleet for Supply Chain Group here at Powerfleet, based in Tampa, Florida, in the USA.
Okay, superb. So for people who might be unaware, Mark, could you start off telling us a little bit about what Powerfleet does?
Yeah, that's a pretty interesting question. I'll try and keep this fairly brief. So Powerfleet is really an amalgamation of four or five companies that have been acquired over the last three plus years. We were previously known as ID Systems. And really what we do, broadly speaking, is provide telemetry technology, be that hardware, software, and the services around telemetry, for industrial or four sectors, business sectors. So transportation and logistics, industrial, which is really material handling equipment inside of warehousing, distribution centers, manufacturing, and then an IoT business, which is really more telemetry of, you know, fixed assets, be that intelligent PLCs and computers and such like. And then lastly, particularly in here in the States, we have a vehicles group, which is really providing telemetry on assets like cars and small vans and that kind of stuff. So it's really a telemetry company. As I say, it's been formed over the last, what, 4 or 5 years with a number of acquisitions throughout the globe.
Okay. And what do your customers use you for?
Well, that very much depends on the customer. So again, just to give a couple of very simple examples, if we look at, over the road assets like tractors and trailers, you know, trucks, 18 wheelers, articulated, you know, lorries, as they might be called in Europe, it's really to track those resources, understand where they are, what are they doing, are they doing the things that they need to be doing, and are they doing what they're supposed to be doing in the most efficient manner possible. And that's also the actual asset itself, as I say, the truck, the trailer, the product inside that trailer, and the driver that might be moving that piece of equipment. So it really gives visibility to the organizations that own or operate those bits of equipment, to make sure they're doing it, as I say, in a safe and efficient manner. On the industrial side, we have, as I said before, telemetry that works inside warehousing, distribution centers, manufacturing. And really, it's the same thing, just on a different asset, whereby they want to make sure that the operators are using them safely, because they are, generally speaking, in a fairly dangerous environment. And are they being used, you know, operationally to meet the business needs and demands of the company in efficiency and productivity?
Okay. And we're in the middle of a pandemic, and I gotta think that, you know, that has changed people's patterns of consumption. You know, there's a lot more of people buying stuff online for delivery to home rather than going out and buying stuff, which has to have impacted on your customers' businesses. What kind of changes are you seeing happening out there?
Well, really, I think the change has been significant, regardless of you know, what part of the globe we're in. Your point's well taken. I mean, the significant change or shift over to online retailing, or e-tailing, as it's commonly called, has created significant opportunity and, I think, challenges for every business. Whether you're in the supply chain, i.e., you're moving that product from, let's say, a warehouse to a distribution center, to a store, or even to, you know, the consumer, you and I and others, that has, I think, and it depends on the reports and other things you might read, but and it depends on the geography as well. But they reckon that, you know, that the pandemic has speeded up that evolution by maybe 7 to 10 years. So you know, we've compressed the supply chain. We're moving things in different ways and different areas, different directions than maybe people were planning, you know, in 2019 to 2020 and beyond. And that has created a significant shift, not just in dollars, but the amount of product that's being moved around, right? I can give you a US perspective. As I mentioned earlier on, I've been in the US about 22 years now. You know, and again, it's very different over here depending on the geography. You know, California was shut down, where I've been in Florida for the last 2.5-3 years. We've really been almost wide open. And then you look at the UK and Germany, it's very, very different. So yeah. I don't know there's a simple answer. Other than, as I said before, I think the shift to online e-tailing and the deliveries out to the last mile, the end consumer, has increased significantly over the last, you know, 12 months or so. I don't think it's going to go back. I think, you know, people are now used to that service. You know, 2-day, 3-day delivery is now down, and, you know, down to 1 day or even a few hours, depending where you are in the country or in the world. I don't see too many people going back to, you know, the old ways, whatever they may well be. There may be a gradual shift, but I think the new norm is really going to be with us for some time to come, maybe even forever. And that puts enormous pressure on the businesses. That puts enormous pressure on those businesses to adapt so quickly and then to maintain that, that, you know, if you will, revisioned, you know, supply chain for the short as well as the long term. You know, that's going to require investment in potentially, you know, new or smaller warehousing and distribution centers, getting, you know, more local to the end consumers, and not necessarily these mega DCs that could be, you know, millions of square feet or square meters. So I think there's a number of things that are going to be happening over the next, well, now really over the next, you know, 12 to 18 months to really shift that on a more permanent platform or platforms.
Okay, and I assume as well it'll mean investing in fleets of newer, smaller vehicles or similar.
I think that's part of it. I think it could well be. You know, tractors, trailers over here, 53-foot containers and such like, you can't take them, you know, everywhere. You know, articulated lorries throughout the, you know, Europe and elsewhere in the world are limited as to where they can go and the speeds that they can go. I think, you know, going to smaller, I don't think we're going to get rid of those bits of equipment, but I think the smaller sort of, you know, the vans, the Mercedes-Benz of the world, for example, those kinds of things will become, I think, more prevalent. Again, looking at, you know, Amazon as an example, everybody looks at them, and I don't think they're the only people, but, you know, there's an awful lot of those Amazon Prime, you know, Mercedes-Benz kind of vehicles now flying around, you know, the US and elsewhere in the world. I don't see that changing. I don't think that's not going to change significantly. But you still need the big vehicles, you know, the articulated lorries, to get the product in some volume with some level of efficiency, cost efficiency and elsewhere, and, you know, in addition to the carbon footprint and all those things that are important. I think we just need to look at innovative ways to moving that product around more efficiently. And I think that's where telemetry can really help, whether that's knowing where it is, maybe knowing where, you know, traffic accidents and, you know, traffic delays and other things, and being able to divert that that, you know, piece of equipment in a more efficient manner can help all those, you know, all of us, you know, really do more with less, if at all possible.
Interesting. I just, from casual observing around here where I'm based in Spain, I've seen, well, first of all, before the pandemic, I never saw an Amazon Prime vehicle. Just never saw one. They didn't operate here that I know of. And suddenly they started operating here. Suddenly they started appearing on the streets. And the ones that have appeared on the streets here are I think they're Citroën or Mercedes. And the Mercedes that they have are the e-Citaros. So they're EVs. They're 100% electric. And it's, you know, plastered on the side of them, 100% electric. So I wonder, does that speak to a trend towards the electrification of last mile deliveries? Or is that just Amazon greenwashing or somewhere in between?
We'll be right back.
Elevate your brand with the Sustainable Supply Chain Podcast, the exclusive voice in supply chain sustainability. Last year, this podcast's episode were downloaded 113,000 times by senior executives across the world, with listeners concentrated in the EU, North America, and Asia. Become a sponsor, lead the conversation. contact me for sponsorship opportunities and turn downloads into dialogues. Act today, influence the future.
I don't think it's Amazon greenwashing. I think they are heavily looking at, and you know, it's public domain much of this, and I, you know, they're a customer of ours, so I have to be a little bit careful as to what I say. I don't think it's greenwashing, to get back to your question. I do think there is enormous benefit for them from a, you know, carbon footprint, amongst other things. They have numerous initiatives, not just on the vehicles that they deliver, but on the warehousing and the fulfillment centers that they have, you know, throughout the world. And I do think, you know, they may be leading the path, maybe at the sort of the tip of the spear, so to speak. But, and, you know, I think many, many other organizations, large and small, do understand that, I don't want to get into politics here about, you know, climate change and, you know, global warming and those things, but, you know, anything that we can do to help, you know, minimize the impact, the carbon footprint impact, et cetera, is something that, I think everybody should do, you know, citizens as well as businesses. I think it takes an industry leader like an Amazon, like a Walmart, you know, over here, and, you know, other organizations like, you know, in the UK, Tesco, Sainsbury's, those large retailers that have a huge number of assets on the road on a daily, weekly, monthly basis. It takes those industries, I think, and those companies in those industries to lead that charge, to bring that initial cost of ownership, cost of deployment down, and maybe encourage governments, UK, you know, US and elsewhere, to, you know, implement the infrastructure that's required to charge those assets, whether that's your vehicle or mine or the business vehicle. So I think there's a number of things that are in play here. But I don't think it's going backwards. I don't think I only see it going forward from an electrification perspective.
And I mean, UPS and FedEx have been doing this for quite a while as well. So I mentioned Amazon because they were one that was quite obvious. But and they ordered something like 100,000 delivery vehicles from Rivian, in whom they have invested hundreds of millions of dollars as well, if I remember correctly.
That's absolutely true. I don't know exactly the numbers, but I think you're directionally accurate. And you're right. You know, people like FedEx and UPS, whether it's, you know, electrification or natural gas or some other combination of more eco-friendly, shall we say, you know, fuels. I think there's a number of initiatives around the world that are really, you know, pushing the envelope a little bit. And, you know, again, battery technologies, you know, improve significantly. You can get more on the charge and you can get more of a charge more quickly. All those things really are, you know, part and parcel of you know, pulling the puzzle together, right? I think we've got the four corners and maybe the edges of the puzzle, and we're starting to fill in the, you know, the middle pieces, which is, generally speaking, the more difficult aspect of it, more costly, more time-consuming. But, yeah, all those companies and many others, I think, are really pushing that envelope. So many others, I think, will follow over the next, you know, the next years to come.
Okay. And what about other technologies? I mean, we're seeing kind of the winding down of 3G as we're seeing the winding up of 5G. I mean, I saw a report the other day saying that the launch of the iPhone 12 had a significant impact on the rollout of 5G in the US. Is that having an impact, the rollout of 5G, for example, and the sunsetting of 3G, is that having any impact on telemetry?
Oh, absolutely. Again, you know, more specifically for North America, US and Canada follow. But yes, you know, the fact that the 3G networks are you know, have been announced by most, if not all, of the telecom carriers over here to be closing down, you know, over the next sort of 12 to 20 months, depending on who that carrier is. I mean, there are, I don't know how many, but probably hundreds of thousands of assets out there that are still on that 3G network that, I don't want to say have to, but if they don't move to some other communication, and over here it's 4G, LTE and 5G and such like, if they don't move to a newer technology, then visibility of those assets basically stops the day the network falls over. Now, you know, it'd be a gradual thing over time. You know, we have many customers, and you know, I'll get into the, you know, details here, but many customers that are looking, have been and are even more actively looking now that those that those dates have been announced by many of the carriers to, you know, refresh, upgrade, replace, you know, tens of thousands of assets, so that they can have that visibility over the next 3, 5, 7 years. Whether it's, you know, jumping straight to 5G, and 5G is, you know, lots of adverts about 5G, but it's not fully deployed as yet. It's available in certain areas of the country. Again, looking at the US. but you know, there's a stepping stone to help them get there. And we're actively involved in many of our customers and prospects, helping them, guiding them for a little bit, if you will, advising them as to really what, you know, what the best avenue is to take, because there isn't a simple answer. You know, we've been there, done that, got the t-shirt, so to speak. And I think we have some guidance and advice that many people are listening to, and ultimately they make their own decision. But you know, 3G is going away, 4G LTE is here. It's very broad and available, and will give you that stepping stone to 5G. And I think many organizations are really challenged and challenging themselves as to, you know, what they do and when they do it, because they know the window's closing fairly quickly.
My understanding of this would be that there is a black box, for want of a better word, within these vehicles that has a 3G SIM card within it somewhere, which, as you said, when the 3G towers are shut off, will no longer allow these vehicles typically to transmit their information, because the 3G SIM card won't have a tower to connect to. So they'll need to swap it out for a 4G or a 5G SIM card. But it's, from what you're saying, it's not as simple as just swapping the SIM card. It sounds like the whole black box will have to be, in many cases, replaced with a newer black box with an embedded SIM card. Is that basically in the ballpark?
That's very accurate. I mean, I'm not saying you can't take the SIM, a 3G SIM, and replace it with some other, but I think it will be a very, very small percentage that will have that capability, because the technology has moved on. The SIM cards are very different, power consumption, I mean, there's antennas, the RF frequency. I mean, there's a whole bunch of other stuff, but I don't mean to suggest I'm a mechanical or an electrical engineer expert at all. But sure. I think, you know, 99.9% is basically take whatever black box you have, take it off, replace it with another black box, to use your term, which gives you that forward, you know, forward view from a communications perspective. And I also think at this point, it's, you know, many organizations are saying, okay, do I do a replacement, a like for like, or do I now take an opportunity to look at what the communications path, the speed, the latency, and all those other things have done and improved from where it was, you know, 3, 5, 7, 10 years ago or more. And rather than just do a like for like, what can I do if I'm going to replace something? What can I get more from it? You know, not just is it cheaper, is it faster, but what can I do with these things that maybe I couldn't do, you know, 5, 7, 10 years ago? And is that going to take my business forward? And, you know, whether it's increasing data, real-time visibility, you know, potentially, you know, video, that kind of stuff. Are there things that I can do? Is there data I can collect that I couldn't collect because now I can transmit it more effectively and potentially cheaper? So I think there's a number of things there, which is, you know, all adds to the struggle, if you will, for many organizations to really understand they've got to do something. What is it they want to do, and where is it going to take them, and what benefits can they derive from having to do so? Because it is an investment, whether it's capital investment or, you know, operating expense, there is still money involved.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not easy.
Yeah, obviously. And you know, video was exactly where I was going to go, because I know increasingly it's possible to build video sensors into vehicles. The cost has come so far down, both for kind of looking at the back, looking ahead, dash cam kind of thing, plus monitoring the drivers to make sure that they're okay. Typically, that hasn't been transmitted in the past, but there's a possibility now, particularly if you're going 5G, to transmit that, yeah?
That's absolutely true, yes. And I think one of the things I would also add to that is caution everybody to not transmit everything for the sheer hell of doing so. The fact you have a pipe big enough to send it doesn't mean it's, you know, it's really transmit what you need to do something with it, right? So if there is an incident, if there is an alert, whatever the case may be, that's what needs to be transmitted, if you will, communicated, you know, effectively, timely, and so on. But if everything's running, you know, according to plan, whatever that might be, and the driver is, you know, he or she is operating the vehicle, you know, safely and within whatever criteria you've set, then, you know, don't worry about it, right? But just manage the exceptions, but then send more data with regard to that exception so that you have, I say real time, but pseudo real time, you know, visibility, for want of a better term, as to what might have happened, whether it was a near miss, speeding violations, you know, a traffic light, or even, you know, God forbid, an accident, right? So I think that video capability a picture's worth a thousand words, right? A video is worth a million in that regard. Yeah. So you know immediately what's happened or what may have caused that incident or something to happen. And that's all very well on the over-the-road assets, the big rigs, the tractors, trailers, and articulated lorries, etc. Or even, the smaller vans that are delivering for the last mile. But you can also look at that from inside the building, if you will, the warehousing distribution centres, because there are many, many thousands, if not millions, there are millions of fork trucks and lift trucks in use throughout the world on a daily basis. And they are, generally speaking, can be very dangerous. I mean, if people are not being, driving them, operating them safely, pedestrians walking out in the middle of aisles and all those other things, that video capability can really be can be used to train and educate others and, potentially save lives and injuries and the cost involved in all that sort of stuff. So I think we can use that kind of wireless technology in very, very many different areas. And then, sucking all that information back in some form or other, getting into some sort of artificial intelligence, AI, and predictive maintenance, predictive accidents and various other things, really enables, you'd hope to enable us all to be better stewards of the world we live and the things we do on a daily basis.
Mm. The warehousing is a very different environment as well, though, because it's a controlled environment. So it's possible to roll out a private 5G network within that environment. And I'm sure that's happening and will enable all kinds of other possibilities around data collection that, are not possible in the wide world as yet.
I think that's absolutely true. The fact that, as you say, it's a building that you own or lease or whatever else, you can control that environment much more so than you can, the highways and byways of the world. I think one of the benefits that, whether it's 4G, LTE, 5G, it gets that data off of the, if you will, the Wi-Fi network, the internal business network, which again, I think part of the challenge there is the data security, not just in Europe with GDPR and all those other things over here in the States, as well as, in California, where they have this thing called the CCPA, which is a derivative, if you will, of GDPR. I know that's a lot of acronyms there, and I have to explain them. But basically, if you can get that data off of the internal business network, it can help improve or reduce, the data security concerns that many companies have. Unfortunately, we live in the world where, people hack into businesses, not just here, but elsewhere. And IT and, CIOs around the world are, I think, becoming more and more concerned that every time they open themselves up to, potential, hacking, for want of a better term, it's a massive risk. So, yes, communications technologies like 5G and 4G LTE can really enable those businesses to get what they need without necessarily opening themselves up to the bad actors in the world.
Okay. Other technologies that are coming along disrupting other industries are the likes of AI and ML, blockchain, all these other kind of things. Are they having any impact in the logistics space?
Oh, definitely. I mean, artificial intelligence, AI, machine learning, ML, blockchain is, something that's been spoken about, as you well know, for a number of years. There's another term, Industry 4.0, with regard to manufacturing. I think all of these are really looking at, convergence of various technologies, be that communications and the speed of, the availability of, the processing power at the back end is growing exponentially. I think it's Moore's Law, if I remember correctly, from many, many years ago at college. So I think all of those are sort of really, coming together in some form or other to really leverage the capabilities that we have now that we didn't have even a year or two ago, to be perfectly honest. I think AI has its part to play with regard to, as I said, predictive and preventative and that kind of stuff. Are there things that we can do in a system that would say, for example, that route or route, getting back to my English term, that route is predominantly or generally speaking safe, but if you go around this route, it's more are likely to have an accident, or the history provides us with that data, so you can start routing, routing equipment and vehicles in a more efficient but also safer manner. There's a whole bunch of things. We could be here for hours sort of kicking around ideas, but I think all those things are available to us as, and I think companies like Powerfleet with the telemetry technology we provide, both on the hardware and the software, but also the back-end systems, really should be enabling our customers to utilize this technology much more efficiently and effectively. That's really our challenge.
Superb. Mark, we're coming towards the end of the podcast now. Is there anything I've not asked you that you kind of wish I had? Any topics that we've not talked about yet that you think it's important for people to be aware of?
Well, you and I, you're an Irishman, I'm an Englishman. We could talk about the Six Nations rugby, but I don't think your podcast listeners would care. I do. I don't know that there's a simple answer to all these questions. If there were, when it would be a lot smarter people than I would have figured this out many years ago. You know, I think, as you say, there's the pandemic, you know, different technologies, edge computing and all those things. As I said before, I think you know, the challenges for companies like Powerfleet and many others out there is to really try and bring those pieces of the puzzle together to enable our customers and prospects, et cetera, to get the best of that technology, not just today and not in 6 months, but in, you know, 2 years, three, five, 7 years. And that's really, I think, where we all need to aim really today.
Sure. Sure. Mark, if people want to know more about yourself or about Powerfleet or any of the things we discussed today, where would you have me direct them?
Probably the best thing to do is go to our website, www.powerfleet.com. There's a whole bunch of information on there that I've just spoken about. It gives a bit more information on the industries and technologies that the industries we serve and the technologies we have. I can be found on LinkedIn by all means, Mark Stanton. I have a middle name, but I just don't use it, being an Englishman. really, that's probably the best place to go to get you some initial information. My contact details are on the website, and anybody can reach out to me directly if they have any questions.
Perfect. Perfect. Mark, that's been really great. Thanks for coming on the podcast today.
I appreciate it, Tom. Look after yourself. Thank you.
Okay, we've come to the end of the show. Thanks, everyone, for listening. If you'd like to know more about digital supply chains, head on over to sap.com/digital-supply-chain or simply drop me an email to tom.raftery@sap.com. If you like the show, please don't forget to subscribe to it in your podcast application of choice to get new episodes as soon as they're published. Also, please don't forget to rate and review the podcast. It really does help new people to find the show. Thanks. Catch you all next time.